I spoke this morning about the Shulamite girl and talked about her as a maiden that had true love in her mind. I want to talk about another woman tonight. Her name is Esther. When you think about the women of the Bible, I'm thinking of Sister Dias now. 2 John talked about the elect lady because of her faith. And I believe that Sister Dias is our elect lady because she's so full of faith and inspires us so very much. Women have often been the backbone of many churches. When I lived in North Carolina, we had, in the beginning of that congregation, there were three women that were members. Their husbands were not members. And the women held the church together until men were baptized and began to help her and take over. And it was a wonderful thing to know that they had that kind of strength of faith that they would endure all of that. But there's another woman that we want to look at tonight, Queen Esther. This picture is, of course, not her picture, but it's something like she must have been because she was a beautiful lady. And her cousin Mordecai was with her, and they were in captivity. And they were in Persia at this time. So some of the Israelites had been in captivity in Assyria, then later in Babylon, and now they're in Persia. Later on, from Persia, they return home. But Queen Esther was in a deadly situation where her people were about to be slaughtered. And her cousin came to her and said, "If you remain completely silent this time, deliverance will arise from the Jews for another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" That's a pregnant statement. That's something that just abounds with the idea of God's providence and that God can use people sometimes in unusual circumstances. And indeed, Queen Esther was one of the great women of the Old Testament. And the Jews remember her even today as they have their different holidays. The background of this, of course, this was the third year of the king Ahasuerus. I'll just call him Ahaz. It's a little bit easier. The king of Persia. And they had a six-month banquet for the army and the officers. So as they had this banquet, of course, it was a six-month event, so it was quite an elegant thing. And then they had a seven-day banquet for all in the capital, and the capital was Shushan, the palace. And so they've been enjoying this for a number of days, but they were known for their cruelty, and they were known also for their much drinking. So after much drinking, the king commanded Queen Vashti, who was at that time his wife, to come and parade her beauty. And we don't say much about Vashti. We don't really know more about her than that. But she refused to obey the king's command. And you know that in Persia, the king was not to be disobeyed. If he gave an order, it was absolutely to be followed to the nth degree. Vashti had to be a very modest woman to refuse to come into the king's presence. But she did that. And the king became very angry. He sought counsel from his wise men, who were not very wise. But they said that the queen was set an example for the other wives. He had many wives. And therefore, Queen Vashti would be removed. And so she was removed from the idea of being his queen again. Then they searched the kingdom for beautiful virgins to come in and to be a part of the king's harem. And from them, he would choose a new queen. And so here's where Esther comes in, of course. They had a 1 year preparation for each maiden that came in. They had to have certain foods. They had to be cared for and made beautiful for the king. And so all those that came in had to be there for a year before they were selected. And each one spent one night with the king. And you see this in the old kingdoms and how they did with their harems, of course. And if not called by the king to come back and be the queen, then they had to remain in the harem. They're not released to the public again. They had to remain in the harem. And they had already been in touch with the king. So Esther is chosen. She's a Jewish woman in captivity who lived with her cousin Mordecai. And Mordecai was a very wise man, and he was one who trusted in God. So the king chose Esther to be the new queen. Now, this has caused people to talk about marriage, divorce, and remarriage sometimes. I went to a debate where they kept saying, bring Esther up, bring Esther up. Well, this was the Old Testament, you remember. And in the Old Testament, they, like such as David and Solomon, they had many wives and concubines. The Bible says that God passed over the sinlessness of the past because of the hardness of their hearts. And we wouldn't go back to Esther in any way to talk about somebody living in adultery, because that was not the situation in the Old Testament. So she became the queen, and he chose her. And Esther kept her nationality a secret. I don't think it was necessarily something she was ashamed of, but something that at that time you could get into trouble with the Persians if you were not respected, and the Jews were certainly a slave people. So one day, Mordecai, who was in the palace, overheard two men plotting to assassinate the king. So the plot thickens. And he recognizes that they're going to assassinate the king. So he told Esther. And then Esther gave the message to the king's officials. And the plot then was overcome. The two men were hanged. And this is important. The event went into the king's chronicles. The fact that Mordecai had been the one to warn him, and this became a part of the official court records. We'll notice that as we come back to it a little bit later. Well, now we come to Haman. And the king made Haman the second in command. And he was very much of an egotist. He wanted everybody, when they came in his presence, to bow. And, of course, it came down to this. Mordecai refused to bow. He recognized his allegiance to God, but he did not bow before Haman. And he was so angry that he was going to take out his anger on all the Jews. This is how wicked he was. He was going to destroy all the Jews and all the Persian Empire. And Haman told the king the Jews did not follow his law and offered 10,000 talents of silver. Now, a talent was like the weight of a human being, so that's quite a lot of silver. To enrich the king's treasure, he had signed a decree to put all the Jews to death. You see this wicked hatred that he had. And the decree was determined, and the king used his signet ring to stamp that decree, so it became official. And in Persia, if I remember reading correctly, once a king's decree went out, it could not be overthrown. It had to be done, whatever the king decreed. And so the Jews were in quite a lot of trouble. Well, Mordecai then went in the mourning because he knew that his people were about to be destroyed by Haman. And a copy of the edict against the Jews was given to Queen Esther. And Mordecai asked Esther to go to the king and intercede for her people. But here's the problem. In those days, if someone entered the presence of the king without his sending for you, you could be put to death, and that included his wife. And so she recognized the danger that put her in, but she was asked to go and intercede for her people. At first, she was afraid of being put to death because she knew the king could do that and would do that because he killed a lot of people. And she was reluctant to go. And that's when Mordecai, well, one more thing before we get there. Mordecai said, Esther said, go and gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Have you ever been to that crossroads of your life where you know that you've got to make a choice and it's hard to make, but you know it's like a crossroad of your life. It's time that you made a choice. And I can well imagine the danger that she felt, the fear that she had, because no doubt she had seen many people put to death in the kingdom. But nevertheless, she was asking for God's help. And that reminds me when Hezekiah was king and he received a letter from his enemies stating what they were going to do to him. They were going to invade and destroy the nation. And he went and held this up before the Lord. Will you help me? And the Lord helped Hezekiah because he appealed to God for help. So this is somewhat like it is with Esther as well. And so when she went into the presence, he held out the golden scepter, which was, in fact, his permission. He agreed to hear what she had to say. Now remember, she knows what the decree has already said. So she had to go about it in a diplomatic way, and sometimes we have to learn discretion. Esther requested that the king and Haman would attend a banquet for the king. And of course that pleased him. So when asked what she desired, she said that she would tell them tomorrow. And at another special banquet for the king and Haman, she asked him to be present as well. Well, of course, Haman was elected. His ego, he thought, was he was going to be in the king's presence. And here was Esther going to be a part of all that. But he saw Mordecai at the gate because he was a respected part of the king's men. And he got jealous. He was mad that Mordecai was still around. He wanted to kill him. So intending to hand Mordecai the next, and that's a mistake, should be hang Mordecai the next day, Haman commanded that a gallows be built 75 feet tall. He wanted people to see what was going on. And you know, I'm somewhat in favor of public hangings again. I could find a number of occasions where a public hanging would do a lot of good for our country. It's a long list, of course, that I would like to be hung. But that's not in our practice today. But that gallows was 75 feet tall. Well, that night, the king could not sleep. This is in chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthanan and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers who had sought to lay hands on the king. He asked, what reward has Mordecai received? And no reward had been given, but it was in the Chronicles. And so he now how would you like to have somebody to read to you at night? You have to read your own books, read your own scriptures, and he had somebody to read to him. Haman was in the court, so the king asked his advice. What would you do for somebody who's really been in the safeguard of the king? And he was told, well, I think he ought to be placed on a horse and a royal robe and have a banquet. And he was thinking that was going to happen to him. And he actually said this, and the king was going to do it for Mordecai. And the irony of that is so full when you think about how much Haman hated Mordecai. And out of his mouth came the very things that was going to be blessings for Mordecai. And so Esther then said to the king, we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. So king answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he? And where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Can't you see her pointing her finger? I think sometimes of King David when he committed sin in secret and the prophet came in and said, thou art the man. How that must have struck him to his heart. Now then, Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. And as you read the story of Esther, you'll find out that Haman tried to get closer to her, and that infuriated the king more. He wanted mercy, and there wasn't any to be found. And so the king said, the gallows, 50 cubits high, which tells you how much a foot is. 50 cubits would be 75 feet. Which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him on it. You talk about poetic justice. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath was subsided. So you see, here was the man who was going to destroy all the Jews, but the edict has still been written. And so there has to be some way to save the people. And so the king took off his signet ring, which had been taken from Haman, gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. And now we have a new ruling from the king. In chapter 8, verse 11 of the book of Esther, by these letters the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, to kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. Now that brings back the exodus from Egypt in your mind, because when they left, they plundered Egypt. You know, you wonder, well, how'd they get all their gold and silver and stuff to build the ark and later in the temple and those things? Well, because they plundered Egypt. They left Egypt very rich. And now then, in a few years, they're going to leave Persia, and they're going to have money again. God has always seen to it that his people have had enough to take care of themselves. Even in the wilderness wandering, he gave them manna from heaven and gave them dove from the air. And you see these things taking place. Even when Abraham was called, God fixed it so that Abraham became wealthy. And when Jesus was about to be destroyed at Bethlehem, when the wise men came, they brought gold and silver and spices, and that helped them go down to Egypt. God took care so they would have enough. And so here we see this happening again. Now they're going to be going back home to Israel pretty soon, and they're going to have money to go back and do those things, and they would plunder their possessions. So Mordecai sent a decree setting aside an annual holiday for the Jews, and they still keep that holiday. It's called Purim, the days of Purim. And it celebrating the last days of February, coming up not too far away, and commemorates Esther and how Esther saved her people from destruction. And so there's a special place in the Bible for women like that. We read about Deborah, of course Mary, the mother of Jesus, and so many other faithful women. And we're blessed to have faithful women in the church today. And so many times when we hear the feminists speak, they say that women are second degree, they're not as important as men, and they want to be equal with men. Well, God didn't place them equal with men. God placed them under their husband's authority. But at the same time, they have a special place of service. And women can do things that men cannot do, and they are as equal before God's eyes as men so far as value is concerned. And we understand that in the church, but out in the world, there's a fight going on between men and women. And you see it in every television broadcast almost, and women are upset, they're trying to do what they can to be equal. I'll never forget one of the women during some of those demonstrations a few years ago. She bragged and said, "I am a nasty woman." Can you imagine a woman having that low degree thought of herself? And yet she thought that was something to brag about. Well, godly women are to be respected. They have such an influence in the home, have such an influence in the church, have such an influence with the next generation. You go back to the book of Deuteronomy, and you see how they were told to teach the children so that generations yet unborn would remember the law because they're being taught at home. And it's always a loss when women are not in the home and able to bring up their children in the way that they can be brought up. But even with today's necessities, we can still bring up our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And so Purim commemorates Esther in the modern day Jewish language. And in Esther 1, it reminds us again of Queen Vashti. And we don't know anything else about her. One of my uncles named a daughter Vashti because he had read the Bible and he admired Vashti for her sense of modesty. How much we need again that sense of modesty, even among Christians. Because sometimes you see people, especially women, but also men, who don't have that sense of modesty, and they will bare their legs and wear two-piece outfits that are not modest. And so Esther, or Vashti, becomes really an example for women in our generation as well. And so you see a lesson from her modesty that impressed us. She refused to parade before drunken and lustful men. Now again, that brings to mind Herod, when he had his wife's daughter dance in front of him, and she requested the head of John the Baptist. So these things sort of bring to mind other biblical examples that we think about, and how a wicked dancer can cause so much trouble as John was beheaded over that. And it's a challenge to learn the beauty of holiness. One of the things that I've been noticing on our website, there's a lady by the name of Lucy Partain, and she has a blog on our website, and she is a prolific writer. And she's had recently articles on modesty, and she does a great deal of writing. You have an opportunity, look at her blog on our website. It's called Lucy's Blog. But she's a Spanish lady that is so rich in the knowledge of the Scriptures and writes constantly lessons that we can all learn from. And so she was challenging the ladies to learn the beauty of holiness, not necessarily facial beauty, but the beauty of holiness. Another lesson that we can learn is this idea that I'm going to do what I have to do. It may not be to my liking, and I wish I wasn't put in this position, but I know the right thing to do, and that's what I'm going to do. And so, be ready to serve in your life. How do you know but what you were brought into the kingdom for just such a time as this? She felt unwavering dedication to God. See, women can have that deep sense of holiness as well as men. And I know the Bible talks a lot like of men that have been that way, but also the women that have done that. Would you be willing to risk your own life as Esther would? And I'm thankful that we don't have to make those decisions in our time the way it's been done in the past. But nevertheless, we learn these lessons. And this is the thing where it really emphasizes the providence of God. We talk about the providence of God. But Mordecai understood this, that she needs to understand God raised you up in the kingdom of Persia for just such a time as this. Now, I don't have any ability to say that God's providence has been in my life to that degree. But I certainly do believe in the providence of God, and that's why we believe in prayer. Without the providence of God, there's no answer to prayer. And so I believe that certainly God's providence can do the things that we need to have done. And so we look at God's sovereignty. God controls these things. He will pull a nation up when He needs it. He will put a nation down when He needs to do that. He is the sovereign of the universe, and He can do these things. He has the power to do these things. Not miraculous now. He's chosen not to do that. That's His choice. But nevertheless, He can do those things. But God's will always be done. And in that model prayer, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And that's what we pray, that God will do that. And so Esther and Mordecai's faith together helped deliver God's people. Now, you may not have a relative that is that faithful and that close to you, but there are Christians all around you. And sometimes if you have a difficult time, find a person who will listen to you and encourage you. We need to have a willingness to share in one another's life to the point where if something is happening and I'm in dread or I'm in ill health or something is happening that I can't feel like I can handle alone, find a Christian, a brother or sister who will help you do that, because we have a resource right here in this room for one another, to encourage one another, to exhort one another, to lift each other up. And so this closeness between cousins, Esther and Mordecai, was something that was real precious to them, and they were together able to serve God. So we need to be able to find that and to recognize that we can find our place of service. And so this is the lesson of Esther. I thought about when I started the lesson earlier today, I thought, well, not only would that be a good lesson, but let's look at another woman in the Bible. And certainly that's a good example to have. And so she set an example of willing to endanger her own life to serve God, and we have to be ready to do that.